Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I'm your host today, Mike Keyes. Today we're going to have a conversation with Jay Richards, who is professor in the School of Business and Economics at the Catholic University of America. Welcome, Jay.
Thanks, Mike. Good to be with you.
And you're also busy doing other things, executive editor of The Stream, which keeps you in touch with all kinds of issues and presenting them to the American public. So,
definitely.
All right. Now, speaking of recent issues, there's this piece that just came out by Henry Kissinger. This is Henry A. Kissinger about artificial intelligence. Now, some of our younger viewers may not know who Henry Kissinger is. Can you remind them? In fact,
yes, absolutely.
In fact,
Kissinger is a.
Before you do, I just thought of this.
Sure.
I was watching reruns of Johnny Carson a couple nights ago, and Bob Hope was joking about Henry Kissinger riding a camel from Damascus to Tel Aviv. So
wow.
So he's
been around. I mean, he's a fixture certainly in Washington, D.C. I think he's in his mid-90s. He served way back. He was a national security advisor, I think the Secretary of State, under President Richard Nixon. And so he's a sort of a foreign policy guru and continues to be a foreign policy guru. He's associated with the realist school of foreign policy. So basically, his view is that you can't count on any kind of moral framework when you're dealing with other countries. It's just sort of survival of the fittest in international relations. What's interesting about this piece, of course, is that he's writing on something that, as he admits in the very first paragraph, he had absolutely no interest in even 3 years ago, and now he thinks artificial intelligence is one of the most significant and, in his view anyway, worrisome things to come up the pike in a long time.
Yes. Okay, so the article that we're going to talk about is called How the Enlightenment Ends. And in some ways, Kissinger is a child of the Enlightenment. He's got a very high view of what humans can do. And of course, so do you, Jay, in a
yes.
different sort of way. In your new book called The Human Advantage. So, and of course, you and Kissinger come from quite different worldviews, although there's some interesting overlap, and oftentimes you are going to be arguing for some similar things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Kissinger, though he's ethnically and by background, he's Jewish, is basically a secularist. And when you read this piece about artificial intelligence, I mean, even the title, How the Enlightenment Ends, tell anyone that, okay, he sort of buys this really kind of silly historiography in which there were the Dark Ages, and that was the age of religion, and then you had this emergence of reason and the Enlightenment in which we sort of cast off our religious obscurantism, and now he sees artificial intelligence as perhaps being the eclipse of this sunny period that he calls the Enlightenment, and so he is reflective of his age more than anything. I mean, his chronological age, because what's funny is in studying technology and the history of responses to technology, what I found is that people above a certain age almost always notice the costs rather than the benefits of new technology. People below a certain age tend to notice only the benefits, not
right.
the costs.
Yeah.
And so my argument is that if you want to have a mature mind and be neither a pessimist or an optimist, at least an uninformed one, try to focus on both the costs and the benefits. And what we should hope for is that we will, with any new technology, we will exploit the benefits and minimize the costs insofar as that's possible.
And do you think a little cross-generational conversation helps to ward off some of the excesses of either side?
I do. And in fact, you know, I've got children and two daughters who are now 14 and 19, but my 14-year-old is very much a digital native in the sense that she didn't need to be taught anything. She doesn't, even though, of course, the first iPhone was 2007, she was young enough that, so far as she can tell, the internet and Google and even smartphones have always been a part of existence. And so she takes it for granted and is intuitive about it, whereas all these things I had to learn explicitly. And she has a very hard time seeing the problems. I'm constantly having a reminder of the dangers of social media. On the other hand, I recognize that, you know, I'm 50 years old now, that I tend to see sort of the problems. I'm frustrated about the distractions of social media. Fortunately, I write on this and I try to reflect on the economic consequences of things, and I generally think that high technology is a good thing rather than a bad thing,
right.
which can be misused. But that's as true of the tallow candle as it is of anything else. Technology can always be misused, and it always has a cost. And so I've just spent my time trying to separate the chaff from the wheat on this question about automation and the narrow question of artificial intelligence.
I'm looking now at Kissinger's pithy article, and I'm looking just past the section where he has these sweeping generalizations about history that you've already alluded to, you know, the age of reason, you know, eclipse the age of faith. And of course, that's completely ridiculous, but humans have always had faith and reason intermixed and so on. But he does, as a statesman and historian and somewhat of a philosopher, he does have some interesting things to say about artificial intelligence. So let's get into those. So here he warns of the computer algorithms that are the sort of the nuts and bolts behind AI that, you know, that programmers create, that these algorithms are, as he puts it, ungoverned by ethical or philosophical norms. And he's worrying that the overuse of these, or, you know, as they proliferate into more and more areas of life, that human cognition loses its personal character, individuals turn into data, and data is less constrained by deep thought and wisdom. It's more superficial. So tell us how you share some concerns, and maybe how Kissinger might have overstated some of this.
Yeah, and I think part of it is that he doesn't actually understand the problem clearly. He admits that he knew virtually nothing about this. And so 3 years ago, somebody told him that somebody was creating a program that was going to beat people at the game Go, which is very popular in Japan and in Asia. And listeners can just think of it as a far more complex game than even chess. And so this seemed like, well, this would be a real accomplishment to do this. And when it succeeded, he decided to gather some officially smart people together to brief him on this subject. There's no doubt in my mind that probably every person he talked to about this is a materialist and does not distinguish different types of AI. Mm-hmm. So he's clearly kind of imagining that these systems, even though he admits later that they'll never truly be persons, he still seems to think these things are going to just be out on their own sort of doing things. But there's no more reason to think an artificial intelligence, that is, say, some combination of hardware and software, is going to become a conscious agent that's choosing to do things, than worrying that if you make too strong of a tractor, it will become an ox or a horse. And it's just a category error. But so let's sort of set that aside. The other thing I don't know if he fully understands is with Go and these other sort of recent generation of artificial intelligence systems is that they are using what's called machine learning. And he describes this when it comes to Go. Nobody knows how to program all the details that would be needed to win a game of Go, or you could program it to win one, but not the, you know, quintillions that are possible. And so what programmers do, rather than using deterministic programs or models, they create a set of rules, and then they have a way for the program to sort of iterate. So with respect to Go, these programs would actually just keep playing over and over, play different games of Go and tweaking things and then recording the data. It doesn't mean that they're learning. It doesn't mean that they're conscious or remembering in the way we do. What it means is that computers programs are now using statistical methods and probabilistic methods rather than deterministic methods. And so these are, at bottom, they're nothing more than really sophisticated statistical running machines. And that shouldn't be any more scary than, say, a calculator that everybody used in elementary school that's deterministic. It's not anything fundamentally different metaphysically than what's always been happening in computers. They're just really fast. And we've developed a way for them to take account of new information and to really use statistics in addition to just sort of deductive math. That's what's happening here. That's what's happening in Google. Google is a good example of this, in which there's a type of machine learning there. But what Google does is it takes the information of actual conscious people into account. Whereas in the case of Go, my understanding is that this initial program didn't play a bunch of other Go players. It played itself. Mm-hmm. And then ran, you can imagine, okay, so it just plays trillions and trillions of Go games, and then it works up a statistical model of what's going to happen given certain scenarios. That's what's happening here. That's what's going to happen sometime in the future. These AIs are going to do lots of really amazing things. They're going to displace a lot of people's jobs. In other cases, they're going to change people's jobs. Kissinger, I think, still has a bit of the panic from having seen too many Terminator movies and not quite, you know, separating, slicing the bologna thin enough, as I'd put it.
Yeah, science fiction has explored these themes for many, many years, and it's an interesting imaginative sort of extrapolation, often, however, based on false assumptions, as you've already pointed out. So it sounds like Kissinger is mistaking this turn from deterministic programming to statistical-based machine learning as if it were almost like creating free will. I mean, that's similar to discussions about non-deterministic or, you know, chance-based views mm-hmm. of nature somehow explain free will. That's also a category yes. here, isn't it?
It is. And I mean, yeah, people do this, yeah, you know, with quantum physics. They think that somehow, well, if we can only say with some statistical certainty where a location of an electron is, or we don't know both the velocity and the location of some atomic particle, then that suddenly means that chance controls everything at the bottom. And maybe that's now we've got room for freedom. But freedom isn't chance or necessity. It's a different thing. And in this case, I just think that Kissinger doesn't have all these categories really clear. And because, I mean, the reality is any kind of science fiction that explores AI that doesn't entertain the possibility that these machines become conscious is going to be a boring movie. It's like a whole movie about the Star Trek ship computer. Nobody wants to watch that. It's only interesting if these things become conscious. Right. And I just think, look, that's fine. I love these stories, but don't get confused. We're not dealing with anything differently than we were. You know, we have a more sophisticated model of what machines do. And rather than imitating what animals do, you know, in terms of labor-saving devices, now we're creating devices that actually mimic sort of raw intelligence, or what we think of as intelligence, that has huge economic and cultural consequences. But people get overblown, and you end up not being able to separate the chaff from the wheat if you attach to that all of these kind of imaginary scenarios about conscious robots and conscious computers.
Right. By the way, I've had a chance to preview quite a bit of your book, and I found one passage that fits perfectly with where our conversation has gone. Let me quote your own book. Google is not just a clever piece of software built by smart people. It's a hybrid of well-built technology with the networked, intelligent choices of millions of people. Unpack that for us in light of what you just said.
Absolutely. I mean, and I actually think this is how most artificial intelligences are going to work. Our daily experience of artificial intelligence is Google, and it's amazing. I mean, how quickly it can anticipate what I want to do. It often auto-fills what I'm looking for. It's usually finds the, you know, right at the top exactly what I'm looking for. But everybody knows there's not some guy back there picking these things. What's happening is this amazing feedback in which Google basically tracks when you pick a particular thing after you do a particular search, and then you click on a particular web page, the algorithm records that. And so it's taking account of your choice. And then basically, if millions and millions of people type that same sentence in and they click on that same web page, the Google algorithm is going to rank that page very, very highly. And so again, it's using the statistical model, but it gets its data. Initially, the PageRank system got its data from the hyperlinks and web pages themselves. And which is, again, those are free choices by programmers and web page designers. And then all the choices of the users get folded in. And so that's what's actually happening. And this is what I think is a much better model for what we can expect, at least in the near future, is a partnership of human beings, still intelligent agents with free will and choices and rationality, interacting with more and more artificially intelligent machines. Garry Kasparov, who's, of course, the famous chess player, was actually beaten. IBM computer beat Garry Kasparov. He's not a pessimist about this stuff, because what he's noticed in the last 20 years is that chess players themselves have gotten better. Rather than playing by themselves, chess players now play with their favorite programs, and they sort of key off of each other, because humans do things in a different way. I think the same thing will happen with Go. In many ways, I mean, I saw there was I think it was a New Yorker strip a few months ago, and a man is standing before his boss, and his boss tells him, "Oh, you're not being replaced by a computer. You're being replaced by someone who understands computers." You know, and so I think it's going to require that all of us learn how to work in an environment in which we have these machines that are ubiquitous. I mean, I think people imagine that what we'll have in the near future is a sort of really smart robot. No, what we're going to have long before we have a robot that can do everything a human can do bodily is think of it as a utility that's basically free, like Google, where artificial intelligence is sort of accessible online continually, and it's constantly helping and interfering and just engaging with us. And I think that we will, just as doctors eventually figured out to turn off their brain when they went to church, I think we will figure out, I hope, how to deal with this. There are going to be lots, you know, sort of costs involved and distractions, but I don't think it's the end of the human race, and I certainly don't think it's the end of human reason.
Excellent. Let's continue this conversation in another podcast, but thanks, Jay, for explaining how your book and Kissinger's piece might be good reading partners. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Mike.
This is Mike Keyes with ID the Future. Join us again soon as we continue the conversation with Jay Richards about Henry Kissinger's new piece on how the Enlightenment ends and Jay's new book, The Human Advantage, The Future of American Work in an Age of Smart Machines. Thanks for joining us.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.